News.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the art and the beauty of great movie posters and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Triple Play Thursday requests. All right. I am really excited to welcome to the show a terrific filmmaker, Michael Lehman, who has directed a ton of television, really quality, great television, and some really terrific movies, including Hudson Hawk, Because I Said So, the classic Heathers, and Airheads, which came out 25 years ago. It also makes me feel very old that it came out 25 years ago. And it's going to be screened as part of the Cinepocalypse Festival over at the Music Box, beautiful Music Box Theater. And it'll be a week from tonight. It'll be Thursday, June 20th at 8 o'clock. And Michael Lehman is going to be there to talk about that and more. And we welcome him to the show. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I am a great admirer of your work. I really am. I always have been.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. I can't hear that enough.
So, how did you get into the filmmaking business, Michael? Where did it all come from?
Well, like a lot of people, I wanted to be a filmmaker from an early age, and then I took all sorts of other detours for a while, and ended up coming back around after being a grad student in philosophy, in German philosophy.
Wow.
I came back to the States from Germany. And got a job answering the phones for Francis Coppola.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, I started at the bottom of a very good place to be.
Yeah.
And, so I worked for Francis for a few years and had put in an application to film schools and turned them down. And then my application at USC got lost. And when they found it, Francis was running out of money. And they sent me a letter from USC. Do you want to go to film school? I thought, well, I'll make some movies and, you know, get out of the business for a bit to exercise my creativity a little more, and then that got me back on track, and I went to SC and then got out and have been directing ever since.
That's fantastic. I have to ask, what's it like to work for Coppola?
Amazing. You know, he at that time, this was 1980. He just finished Apocalypse Now. The guy was at the top of the world as a director, and he's a terrific person. And an amazing motivator, and you know, obviously an incredible filmmaker. But he ran his company like a family, and it was a kind of a fantastic experience to be there at that time with all the people that were there. And he was very supportive, and really terrific.
Yeah, at that time period you were there when he was making One from the Heart.
Yes, sir. I was on One from the Heart for about 2 years.
I love that movie. And I know it was a disappointment at the box office and a disappointment for him, but I really love that movie. And I thought some of the techniques that he used with the camera, still are breathtaking. And I think it's a terrific movie that I wish more people had seen.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing now. Very few people have seen it or even heard about it, but it was, it is just as you say, it's an amazing piece of filmmaking and it's beautifully shot by Vittorio Storaro,
yeah.
And it's not like any other film. It was good, something to work on. I was very, very lucky to be around for that one.
I bet so. Did you have access to really great wine?
yes, but Francis was kind of starting his winery then.
Oh, okay.
And nobody knew where it was going to go. It was a beautiful property up in Rutherford in Napa, and he would have every year a harvest party where people would come and stomp on the grapes and they would serve all this amazing wine. And so, yes, there was really good wine around and a great kind of culture of the Napa Valley.
It sounds like a wonderful experience. Really great way to start. It's really great. So, have you been you've been to our fair city before, haven't you, Michael?
I have. I love Chicago. I have spent relatively little time there. I went there to cast the movie Meet the Applegates, which was my second film.
Yeah.
And so, way back before I did Airheads, I've been hanging out there a bit. But I've never lived in Chicago. I visit fairly regularly, and it's a great place. But I haven't made a movie in Chicago, so I haven't had a chance to live there.
Yeah. I've lived here all my life, and I'm a little biased, but I think it's the best city in the world. But that's just me. Have you been to the Music Box Theater?
No, but I'm looking forward to it. Is it something amazing?
Oh,
right?
Yeah. No. It is. You will love it, Michael. It is one of the most beautiful auditoriums that you'll ever see. It's legendary. It's been around for years, and the people who run the Music Box understand that. You know, and take care of the place, and it's kind of the premier theater in Chicago. I mean, it really is just a beautiful old school auditorium.
Great,
yeah, you're gonna love it, and it'll be great to see. You know, because it's also, you know, they're screening a 35mm print of Airheads, which is also really great.
I know. I was so excited when they called me and said that they were doing this. I thought, wow, I haven't seen a movie on a big screen probably in 24 years, to pull out a 35mm print and put it up in a nice theater is it's great.
Yeah, and that's the people. That's kind of what the Music Box is all about. And they have 70mm festivals where they dust off older films with 70mm prints, and they really care about cinema, and it shows. And also, it's just a beautiful place to see a movie. It really is. You're gonna have a great time.
Yeah, good. I'm really, really, really looking forward to it.
Do you know, you've done a lot of episodic television. Can you tell me the difference between doing a feature and episodic television? I know speed is one of the things. They have to be done much faster.
Yeah, they do. And so in the making of a television show as opposed to the making of a movie, you are working much faster. I mean, if you make a really low-budget independent film, you might work at the same pace as a television show, but you're not restricted the way television shows are. So, if you think a typical one-hour television show would shoot in 8 days, which means if you doubled the length and said you were making 2 hours of material, you would be shooting it in 16 days. And a typical kind of moderate budget movie maybe shoots 40 days. You know, if it's got effects and other stuff, it might shoot 50 days, and a big movie might shoot 100 days. So you're moving at a very fast pace doing TV, and it requires, as a director, you have to be technically very much on top of your game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the TV, the world of television is so different now than it was, say, back in the, even in the early 90s. And the great filmmakers are making, are directing television now, episodic television. The quality, because of cable and streaming, the quality of what we see on TV now is pretty astonishing. And you directed episodes of some of the best TV shows of the past couple of decades.
Well, making a movie takes a long time, and it takes up a lot of the director's time. If you do a movie, you're in it for about 2 years, maybe more, maybe a little less, depends. But in television, you can come in and you can make something in a relatively short amount of time. So way back in my early days as a filmmaker, I would go do TV just to stay sharp, just to be on set with the actors. And back then, I did the Larry Sanders Show and Homicide and The West Wing, those kind of shows, and those were good television for the time, absolutely. It still wasn't the same as making a movie, but by the time, a couple decades later, I was doing True Blood and Californication, those kind of shows.
Right.
The quality of the writing was great, and the actors were terrific, and the production values were high. So, I watched as TV became more like movie making than it was when I first started.
Exactly. Michael, hang on, okay?
Yep.
Michael Lehman is with us, the director of Airheads, which will be shown next week, Thursday, June 20th, at the beautiful Music Box Theater for the 25th anniversary. And Michael's going to be there for a Q&A as part of the Cinepocalypse Film Fest. The news is coming up, and then more with Michael after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about some of the most beautiful and some of the best and most creative movie posters of all time, which is a true sort of art form that we're going to talk about. We'll talk about some of the best of those, and also we're going to talk about some recipes that people don't make anymore that they should. So, but right now, we are speaking with director Michael Lehman Who has directed movies like Hudson Hawk and Heathers and Airheads, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary with a screening here in Chicago at the Music Box Theater, week from tonight, Thursday, June 20th, 8 o'clock, as part of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival. And Michael is going to be there for a Q&A following the screening of a 35mm print of that movie. And Michael's kind enough to join us this morning. Michael, welcome back.
Hello.
Good. Welcome back. Let's so your first movie... Right out of the gate, you direct a classic. You directed Heathers. How did Daniel Waters' script get to you?
So Dan was a friend of mine through a guy named Larry Karaszewski, who's a great writer and was in film school with me at USC. And Dan was looking for an agent, and he'd written Heathers. He worked for a couple of years in a video store and went home every day and wrote a really long and absolutely brilliant draft of the script, and he couldn't get anybody to pay attention to it. He needed an agent, and I had just gotten out of film school and had an agent, and Larry called me, and he said, Dan's having trouble getting an agent to read his script. Can your agent take a look? And her name was Bobby Thompson at William Morris, and I thought she might get it, and I read the script and was blown away by it. So I brought him, to my agent, and Dan wanted Stanley Kubrick to direct the film. So I told my agent, I said, when Stanley passes, come back around to me and let's see if we can get it made.
That's great. I want Stanley Kubrick when he passes, not if, when he passes.
Yeah, I'm sure Stanley must have regretted that he passed.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a good script. Yeah.
It is a wonderful script, and you did a great job directing it. I mean, your first film right out of the gate, and I truly think it's a classic, and I adore it. And the response to it when it first came out, how was it with you?
It was great. I mean, you know, the movie was not all roses there. There were people who loved it, which was terrific, and there were a lot of people who sort of recognized that it was a dark comedy like you don't get to see very often,
yeah,
and certainly don't get to make very often. And then there were people who hated it, who thought it was in terrible taste, and that it was a comedy about teenage suicide, which is not what it is. But the fact that certain people hated it and then a fair number of people really loved it was great. It stirred the pot, and it got everybody interested. And so, you know, the movie didn't do any significant real-world box office, but it got out there and has had a very long life, I can happily say.
Yeah, and I have to say that, you know, because I've reviewed movies here on WGN since 1985, and when that movie came out, I gave it an absolute rave, and it was funny because the response from, you know, from listeners and people calling in on the show and people writing, it was split down the middle. There were people who really thought I was nuts. And they were and they were angry with me because I liked a film that was that dark and dealt with really taboo subjects.
Yeah, Dan and I went to a lot of screenings when the movie came out, and we were subjected to a lot of angry people telling us what a horrible abomination we've made, and we just smiled and nodded our heads and said, you know, well, you know, take a look.
Yeah.
Take a look again. But, it's hard. A lot of people don't really get what darker comedy is all about, and if you're not on board for it, you can be easily offended because that kind of comedy takes on all the things that you think probably wouldn't be treated as humorous subjects in other circumstances. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And such great performances. How did you assemble that cast?
Well, we worked very hard. We didn't have any money and we didn't have any credibility because I hadn't made a movie before, and we were making it for New World Pictures, which was a small sort of exploitation studio. But what we found was that a lot of the young people got it. They read the language. They got what the movie was about. So, you know, we did a lot of auditions and filtered through a lot of actors. And Winona Ryder is somebody that I'd seen. She was very young. She just started out. And one of the writers of Beetlejuice read the script for Heathers and flipped for it. And Beetlejuice was being shot at that time, and he gave her the script.
Mm-hmm.
And she read it, and she contacted us through Bobby Thompson, the agent, and said that she really wanted to be in the movie, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
And then we had to overcome all the obstacles of her agents and people like that. So we got Winona early on, and then we auditioned for all the rest of them, including Christian, who hadn't done much and came in sort of late in the game. But Yeah, that was quite a fun experience casting that movie, because I wanted real teenagers, and so we brought in a lot of kids who were 16, 17 years old, and they did great.
Yeah. Now, have you seen it lately? Have you watched it in the past years or so?
Yeah, I saw there was a British Film Institute screening last fall, and I went over there, and it was really great. You know, the full theater, big screen projection. They'd done a 4K reconstruction, which is good, because there are no really great 35mm prints of Heathers floating around that I know of.
Yeah.
And it was weird to watch the film. It sort of holds up. I mean, it holds up in a lot of ways. The humor is still great. The performances are good. And it's a different world now. So it's almost, it's as relevant as it was when it was made, but in a very different way.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. So you follow up with Heathers, and were you getting a lot of offers after that?
I was. I got a lot of offers. I made the Meet the Applegates, which is a small picture that I'd been working on that I co-wrote and wanted to make. But that was squeezed in very quickly and very inexpensively before I went on to do Hudson Hawk, which was a big movie with Bruce Willis, a big studio picture. And I did it partly because I was getting all these offers and I thought I would have the opportunity to take something big and unwieldy and turn it on its head, mm-hmm. which maybe wasn't such a good idea in retrospect.
Well, I happen to be a really big fan of Hudson Hawk. Did Daniel Waters come in and do a rewrite, or was the script co-written with him from the beginning?
What happened was there had been early drafts that Bruce had written by writers he worked with, I think, on Moonlighting. And then Steve D'Souza, who wrote Die Hard, and Steve is a really terrific action movie writer.
Yeah,
a great guy. He wrote the first draft of Hudson Hawk that was the story that the movie follows. And but it was relatively conventional. It was kind of down the middle. It was an action adventure comedy that was not quite so out there. And I brought Dan in, and we said, let's just mess with everything. Let's just stir it around and do things that nobody would ever expect, because people are tired of this sort of thing. They're going to want to see it all screwed around with. And so it was really Dan who made the script what the movie was.
Yeah, yeah. Did he write the Wong numbers line?
He may have. I may have actually thrown that one in. I have a bad taste for puns.
It makes me laugh. It makes me laugh every time, man. It makes me laugh every single time. But yeah, and I think the thing about that movie, it's a massively entertaining film, and I think the press was gunning. They were going after Bruce Willis at that time, who had massive amounts of success, and I think that they were looking to knock him down a peg, and I think that's why it received some of the reviews it got.
Yeah, that's a funny thing, because there were also a lot of rumors during the shooting that there were problems. There were rumors that Bruce was having an affair with this actress, all which, by the way, were completely untrue. Mm-hmm. And I saw this. I'd never really been exposed to that. I thought, this is bizarre. We're making a movie, and these rumors are coming back. We were in Europe most of the time making the film. I'd read these press reports and think, what are they talking about? Where does this stuff come from? Anyway, there was all this talk during the making of the movie, which I think helped turn people against Bruce with all his success, and against Joel Silver, who was the producer who was making big pictures, and to some degree against me, as much as I mattered there, because I was a young director coming out of a more indie world, and they were going to punish me for going mainstream.
Right. Yeah. And I agree. Yeah. I agree with that. But people should go back. If you've not seen Hudson Hawks, it's an extremely entertaining film. And I've always liked it. I was a defender of that movie when it came out. So,
Well, thank you.
Yeah. All right, Michael, hang on. Okay.
Yep.
All right, Michael Lehman is with us. He is the director of Heathers and Hudson Hawk and so much more. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Airheads. Airheads celebrating its 25th anniversary this year, which makes me feel very old, with a special screening at the Music Box Theater with Michael live doing a Q&A afterwards. And it's Thursday, June 20th, 8 p.m. at the Music Box. When we come back, we'll talk with more with Michael Lehman, and we'll get into the discussion of Airheads right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Thursday morning. And by the way, I'll be appearing for my Thursday visit with the Steve Cochran gang at around 620. So stay tuned for that. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. My guest right now is Michael Lehman, a filmmaker, great director of tons of really amazing television and some really terrific movies, including Hudson Hawk, Heathers, and Airheads, which is having a 25th anniversary screening Thursday, June 20th, as part of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival at the Music Box. It all starts at 8 o'clock, and Michael's going to be there for a live Q&A following the movie. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Airheads. How did that one come to you?
Well, that was brought to me by an executive at Fox named Michael London, who went on to produce some terrific movies in television now, who read the script, thought I would be good for it. He knew I was a rock and roll fan, and he brought me the script, and I read it, and I said, this is pretty great. So it was a rare case where a studio brought me a script that I was, sort of gung-ho for.
Wow.
And Rich Wilkes, who wrote it, was a very bright, very funny guy who was a real kind of loose-minded rock and roller, and we got along great. And so, it just came together very quickly.
Yeah, as a big fan of rock myself, Michael, I love this movie, and it's clear that the people involved in the film, all the way from the cast to the writer to you. Also love rock and roll, and it's loaded with so many like wonderful kind of inside jokes that only rock and rollers would get. And I just laughed. My friends and I laughed uproariously during the entire movie.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
We had a great time making the movie. That's a lot of the time you make comedies and they're not so much fun to make because it's very painful and very hard to work it all out and figure out how to make everything work. And you're walking a tightrope and you're wondering, will this work? Are we going the right way? On Airheads, the cast was truly fun and funny to work with. And across the board, we had a great time. It was a hard movie to make, but we really, really had fun doing it. And there were a lot of big laughs on the set, which normally don't necessarily translate to the screen, but I think in this case a lot of them did.
Yeah, it felt like you guys were having fun. And I got to say, how can you not have fun with that cast that you have in this movie? I mean, it's amazing from front to back. I mean, how did you get some of these people to get involved? I mean, you have some legends in this film.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, the hardest thing actually was getting the studio to agree to everybody. It was the first movie greenlit by Peter Chernin, who was moving over from running the television, the Fox television, to the feature department. And Peter had he's great. I mean, he was very supportive of the movie, but I had to convince him on a lot of casting on this film. And I remember just struggling like crazy because I really wanted Steve Buscemi. I thought I'd seen him in all this indie film work. I thought he'd be perfect in this film. And they went, what? That guy's not funny. You can't put him in a film like this. And Sandler, who was not a big star at that point, he was on SNL. They all said, well, we don't know if he can translate to movies. And Joe Mantegna, Chicago's own.
Yeah,
I had to fight hard to get him in there. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a legend here. I mean, he's a legend everywhere, but we love him here.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
And you, I mean, people like Chris Farley and David Arquette and the great Harold Ramis and Ernie Hudson. It's funny, Michael. I host a monthly movie screening at a movie theater here in the in Chicago area, and I just screened the 35th anniversary of Ghostbusters. So got to see Ernie Hudson, got to see Harold Ramis as well, who are both in Airheads.
Yeah, we had two Ghostbusters. I was very proud of that at the time.
Yeah. And so you said it was a lot of fun to make, and then the response was not that great when it first came out.
No, it was strange. We thought we were making a really good movie, and we thought it was going to be a breakout for Sandler, and Brendan Fraser is terrific, was good, and it all felt like everything was coming along great, but I think Fox didn't really know quite how to sell it. Selling a rock and roll movie is hard. For some reason, it's hard anyway, but they never quite figured out the best way to get it out there. And we opened, if I remember right, we opened against The Mask, the Jim Carrey film,
wow.
Which was huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And so, you know, we were basically slaughtered in our opening weekend, and the movie never did any business at all until it was picked up on cable in, you know, subsequent years, and then got a pretty big following.
Yeah, it's there are so many great lines in it, and I mean, obviously, one of my favorite exchanges in the movie is the exchange with the great Harold Ramis. Who's a cop pretending to be a, pretending to be a Capitol Records exec, a music guy. And they quiz him on whether he's really a guy or not, and the whole Van Halen line, he's a cop, unbelievable. And there's tons of lines like that in there, and you got Lemmy from Motorhead in there, Primus, White Zombie are all featured in the film. So it's a really terrific rock and roll movie, man, and I love it.
Well, we were trying to make it authentic and be true to rock and roll, but we were also making it PG-13 for a major studio, and that, you know, that was a tough line to walk also.
Yeah.
You know, Harold, by the way, when he was a friend of mine and I asked him to be in the movie, and Harold loved to act, and he was a little reluctant, you know, because at that time he was mostly directing.
Yeah.
And I said, come on, you know, come on, do a couple days. And when he came to the set, I've never seen anything like it before or since. Every single comic actor on that set basically bowed down in front of him. He was just incredible, and also a Chicago guy.
Absolutely. And he's one of my comic heroes. His passing devastated me. I've said that there is the holy trinity of comedy movies for my generation, and that would be Animal House, Caddyshack, and Stripes. And there's one name in common on all three of those, and that's Harold Ramis.
He was a true genius and a great, great, great person. Yeah. You know, unbelievable guy.
I got to meet him a couple of times, obviously through my work here at the radio station. I met him one time, and this was a couple of years after I had initially met him, and it was at the very first Harry Potter screening.
Uh-huh.
He was there with his kids, and I just kind of walked up to him. And I reminded him that we had met before, and he couldn't have been nicer. And I said to him, I just want to say, I love Stuart Saves His Family. And he looked at me like, what? And I truly do love that movie. And I just wanted to thank him for it. And he looked at me like evidently no one had ever said that sentence to him before.
Yeah, I knew him when he was making it. He had a hard time. It is a great movie.
It's
really
great.
Funny. And Harold put a lot into it. That was another case where it's a movie that was really funny and worked the way comedies don't usually work, and it just didn't come out at the right time, and the audience never really found it.
And it also really was a lot more poignant than I thought it was going to be, because I just thought, okay, it's another knockoff SNL sketch made into a movie. But it was really poignant and really, really accurate about addiction and how it affects a family. And I didn't expect that at all when I saw that movie, and I was really kind of overwhelmed by most of it.
Yeah, you know, Harold was a very grounded guy, and he didn't just do jokes. You know, he could do jokes as well as anybody, but he was always looking for some additional meaning, and he was a pretty profound person.
Yeah, and also there's another film that he directed that no one saw that is one of my favorite Christmas movies of all time. That's The Ice Harvest, which I just think is an incredible movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
and right, I forgot that was a great script. He did a terrific job with it, and once again, I guess it never really got a big audience, but it's a great piece of directing. It's a good movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I miss him. He's great. And but he's also, you know, so great in Airheads, as is everybody. Everybody is so funny, and it had to be just, I mean, working with people like Farley and all these guys, it seems like it's nothing but a party on that set, nothing but comedy.
Yeah, you know, Farley, who was a genius and also a sweetheart, was going through all sorts of stuff at the time. He was trying to stay clean.
Yeah.
And he had about four people with him at all times. But he never stopped being completely outrageous and wild and really funny. And he was physical. I couldn't believe what he would do. You know, he would just come in there, throw his body around, and he was a pleasure. He was a real pleasure.
Well, the movie's great, Michael, and for people to get a chance to see it on the big screen at the beautiful Music Box Theater with a 35mm print, it's going to be a real special night. And on top of it, you're going to be there to do the Q&A afterwards. It is Thursday night, a week from tonight, Thursday night at 8 p.m. at the Music Box Theater, and it's part of the Cinepocalypse Festival. And the people who put this festival together, Michael, are really smart people, and they put together a really a varied and wonderful festival for this year. So then I think you're going to have a great time.
I'm very, very, very much looking forward to it, and I hope a whole bunch of people show up and see the film.
Yeah, come on out and see it. It is a terrific movie, 35 millimeter print, and it's the 25th anniversary. God, I feel so old, Michael. 25 years.
don't tell me. So I know, it was only 10 years old when I made it.
There you go. That's right. That's right. It's Thursday, June 20th at 8 o'clock. Tickets are available at the Music Box Theater website. Get them now, and you can ask Michael all kinds of questions. Michael, it was a real pleasure to have you on the show, man. I've been an admirer for years.
Thank you so much. You've been great.
Thank you. Take care.
You too.
All right. Bye. Michael Lehman, everybody, director of Heathers and Hudson Hawk, Airheads, so much more. To get a chance to speak with him, do a Q&A with him, is going to be so much fun. And to see Airheads on the big screen, you guys should definitely check it out.